episode 38 for March 25th, 2010. Your feedback from episode 37, plus the second half of my interview with T. Morris. Isn't it great? It's episode 38 of The Adventures of Indiana Jim.
And now, coming to you not exactly live from
the Cliffs of Insanity,
a man who needs no introduction.
Don't open that! This is an alien planet! Is there air? You don't know!
That intrepid arch-geekologist, Indiana Jim.
You have chosen wise.
Don't tell me you've never heard of me.
I'll explain. And I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
You, boy, are arrogant, hot-tempered, entirely too bold.
I like that. Reminds me of me.
Maybe you're the plucky comic relief. You ever think about that?
I don't believe I've ever seen such a display of courage, skill. Grace. Stupidity.
Why are you listening to this fellow? May I remind you, he's wearing a costume, not a uniform.
I have entertained in all the courts of Europe and speak a ready wit in their every tongue.
I told you I was famous.
Hello, everybody. Not too much I want to get into in this episode because I've got 26 minutes of that second half of the interview I did with T. Morris coming up, and I've got a couple pieces of feedback. So I don't want to extend your ears too far, and I need to get this episode out. So as far as creative projects that I can update you on, the Wars Mavericks 1 novella, which is the working title I've got for it, is currently hovering around 20,000 words of a 30 to 35,000 word novella. So I am creeping toward the finish line, creeping toward the watermark for where I want to be. Doesn't look like there's going to be a lot to edit, and doesn't look like there's going to be a lot to cut. There may be some stuff that I need to flesh out a little more, but as far as, you know, content-wise, it seems to be flowing the way I want it and the way I need it to. I'm getting ready to look up a lot of weapons and armor and stuff, you know, geeking about fake weapons in this chapter, where Jack Wilgris is meeting a weaponsmith who is going to provide him with the things he needs to get the current job done. And so we've got that going. We also continue to gather lines for The Last Guardians. Got a couple roles I'm trying to wrap up here. A few actors that need some redos done. A role change, possibly. Maybe two role changes. I'm not sure what's going to happen with these last two starting roles I'm trying to iron out. P.G. Holyfield has gotten the bulk of his primary lines in, and of course, I think just has one round of redos, and then that's it. I think. I can't remember exactly. I'll have to figure that out. But regardless of the situation, P.G.'s taking care of it. And because he's good like that. Because he's P.G. Holyfield. He's always timely. Oh, I had to go there, didn't I? Ooh, sorry, PG. That's just kind of, well, you know, I mean, so what can I say? So I'm not entirely sure how this is all going to fix itself, but I'm really starting to get antsy and need to get this done. I need to start cracking on it because I'm also working on 21, the Wars short story podcast, which will be put out as part of the Questcast. If you go into iTunes and look up Questcast, you'll find the official podcast of Grail Quest Books. And let me tell you a little bit about 21. There were 21 short stories that are posted on Grail Quest Books website, five or six of which, six of which were written by Michael A. Stackpole. Because Decipher teamed up with Stackpole. They commissioned him to write some short fiction in-universe. And they really developed quite an interesting backstory. And so 21 is, well, it's really 20. And one of the stories is a two-parter. So I sort of cheated on that. I'm not sure whether to make that one episode and then make a new one. Like write my own short story. I'm toying with that idea. Writing a short story another Jack Wilgrist short story or something. I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do with that. But anyway, 21 short stories, six or seven will be read as a straight read by a podcast author that you know and love. I'm working on Stackpole. He has confirmed that, yes, he wants to be a part of this, but he's a difficult man to get a hold of. And so he said he would make time to record the stories, and I'm trying to get a hold of him and say, where's my stories? And you know, Michael Stackpole, he is the epitome of a working writer. He is constantly at work on not only his writing, but also the promotion of said writing. And he's a busy, busy guy. He is a working writer, and he works hard for the money. So hard for it, honey. So you better treat him right. So I'm trying to treat him right. You know, I'm trying not to push him too hard. But, of course, I've mentioned I think Phil Rossi will be taking part. Christiana Ellis will be taking part. Chris Lester just recently agreed to take part. And those are the confirmed participants. Those are the ones that I know for sure that I have something for, and they want to participate. We have that. But the rest of them will be full cast with narration. The good thing about it is they're not the size of a podcast novel. Way, way far away from that. most of these have maybe at most three or four characters, so they shouldn't be too hard. If you are a listener out there, and this is, you know, going to be strange, but I'm appealing for guest voices here. If you are a listener out there and you have a quality microphone and you know how to act, there will be a spot for you. This will not be like Codename Starkeeper, where anybody who wants to take part, I'll throw you in for a little bit part. Everything in this project must be absolutely high quality. If you have the quality, and if you have the acting chops, then there is a spot for you. There will be a lot of work for you to do. I know that I'm going to be asking quite a bit of Philippa Jane coming up soon. Not really a lot, but, you know, stuff that she wouldn't have any problem fitting in. I need to probably get it to her before she takes off from New Zealand where the heck's she going? I don't know. She's coming out here to Virginia-ish. I don't know. She's coming out here to the United States of America. Of course, you know, when she comes out here, she teams up with T and does some promotional things. So she will be coming out in April. So that'll be wonderful. So I need to get it to her before she comes out here and starts making plans to stay a while to work, because she's got Geist coming up. So she's got to make that States push with Ace Books. And of course, if you can, please remember to visit GrailQuestBooks.com, where you can pre-order the Wars novellas of your choice. Hopefully mine will be included in that. And when you pre-order that, the money, the vast majority of it goes to printing and shipping costs for those novellas to reach you. And again, they are graphic novel size format and a trade paper binding. So there you have it. And now let's get to some feedback. First up, Scott Roche called in some feedback after episode 36, which was all about Twitter. Let's hear what Scott has to say.
Hi, Jim. This is Scott Roche. Just wanted to call. I just finished listening to your show on Twitter and social media. I thought it was a good show.
Thanks.
As usual. And yeah. Had a couple of comments. One on Buzz.
Yeah.
You know, I like Buzz. But, you know, It came along too late. And so, I mean, with Facebook as active as I am there, Twitter as active as I am there, I just don't see the point. I mean, it's there, and I look at it from time to time, but I don't pay a whole lot of attention to it. So, you know, until they do something to differentiate themselves, I just don't see myself using it. Mm-hmm. I think Google on this one, as well as on Wave, they pulled the trigger too early without thinking it through or something. Of course, I can forgive them that, because have done so many other great things, like the Google Voice and stuff. You know, most of which they bought from other people. But my favorite thing about Google is Docs. But that's another show. That's another topic for another show. On social media, on Twitter, I wanted to thank you for talking about Hootsuite, because I want more people to know about Hootsuite. It's a great web client for Twitter, and I'm using it more and more, and TweetDeck less and less, particularly at home, and where I have a big enough monitor that I can use either of this. Hootsuite seems to work better API-wise, too. Also, something else that Hootsuite you can do that's nice is the shortening, the URL shortening, the bit that it uses. You can actually track how many click-throughs you got. Yeah. And that's kind of neat for me, because I tweet a lot of links, and I like to know if people are actually looking at the stuff I'm tweeting about. Yeah, maybe that's a little self-involved, I don't know. But in any event, I really like Hootsuite. And I also wanted to say that there's one other kind of tweeter I don't particularly care for, and that's the constant retweeter, I guess the echo chamber, whatever you want to call them. They basically all they do is retweet.
I thought I'd mentioned those guys.
And I think that's one that I don't tend to follow back on.
No.
So, and I've also wanted to talk a little bit about blocking, and I wanted to see if you know how often you block. And you said you're kind of a douche if you block, kind of a douche if you don't. So, you know, what criteria do you use for blocking somebody or not following them back? Personally, I block the really obvious spammers. I used to block people that just weren't interesting to me, but I decided after some conversation that I would just not follow them, but I wouldn't block them. So, anyway, it's probably enough rambling, and I'm probably coming up on the 3-minute time limit. So I'll just say I enjoyed your show once again. Looking forward to the next one, and see you on Twitter. Bye.
Well, thanks, Scott. Appreciate you calling in. What criteria do I use for blocking? Well, you know, I think I'm really sort of in the same realm you are. Corporate tweeters. Let's talk about them real quick. Because you write a fine line as a corporate tweeter between using it for your business and spam. My mind is just falling apart here. I think as a corporate tweeter, it behooves you to follow other Twitter accounts that are in your industry. However, and this is just my opinion, I don't think corporate tweeters should just go out and follow anybody that matches a search string. What I think you should be doing is you have your search string, and when people tweet something about what you're, you know, if they tweet something about their tires, you look at their tweet, you find their location. If your business is a national chain, let's say you're Big O Tires, okay, and somebody says, just had a blowout, doggone it, I hate blowouts, okay, that's, you know, really blue language there, but, and you see that and you go, you know, we have a sale right now on ba-da-da-da-da. Now, they might call it spam. But you just reply. Put it in that reply. Don't follow the person, because so many businesses that I have no interest in follow me for no reason. For instance, a real estate tweeter in Ohio. Hello, is my name Ohio Jim? Please. So I will block pretty much any corporate account that follows me because, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm being stalked for their business. I will block people who, you know, obviously all the different people we talked about, the retweeters and the constant linkers and the famous quoters and the, and whatever. Most people who are following me, if they follow me and they seem well-spoken, they, if their first page has a variety of topics on it, I will follow them. And the good thing about Hootsuite or TweetDeck, either one, really, the good thing about TweetDeck or Hootsuite, really either one, is the columns you can make. And it really helps where if they're really, really interesting or they're, you know, top of the chain, popular kind of, not really popular, I mean, I have different groups based on level of interest. And, you know, if they're really, really interesting, let's say like, you know, Philippa Jane, she's one of the top as far as interests. Scott Roche is one of the top as far as interests go. There's some others that are less than. I have a column just for famous tweeters to follow them. I have a column for podcasters, you know, people I'm not really always in contact with, but that I know from podcasting. I have a column just for people who are very close friends to me. And most of these lists are private. I think Big Timers is the only one that's public. But most of the lists are private because I don't want somebody to go, how come I'm only in group C? Well, because you're about that interesting to me. So if I get a new follower and they're mildly interesting, I'll put them in C. If they seem really interesting, I'll put them in B. If they're one of the Big Timers that I already know about and I know what they're about, philosophically or whatever, then they will go into group A and these kinds of things. So if they're not interesting to me at all and they're not spammers and they seem to have variety of tweets, but they're not interesting or they're really vulgar or they're not well-spoken, a lot of single letters and punctuation to try to pretend to make words, then I probably won't follow them back, but I will let them follow me because obviously I want to build a following and I have a podcast and I'm putting myself out there in the community as, you know, an opinion to be heard. And so why do I want to block people who actually want to follow and hear what I have to say? So really blocking is only reserved for spammers, honestly, you know, porn Twitter accounts or, you know, like I said, corporate ones that I don't need them following. I don't want them following me because they're just going to inflate my followers' numbers and make me look like a douchebag. So there you go. Anywho, what's next? We have a voicemail from Dan, the art man from Spokane, Washington.
Hello, is this Indiana Jim?
No, wrong
hey,
number.
Hey, this isn't London calling, but this is Dan, the art man from
Spokane, Washington. Yeah.
Washington State. Anyways, Indiana Jim, I was just calling to say I've been going through your old podcast episodes, your archives.
God bless you, sir.
And I've been really digging it.
Really?
Really liking it, and I know every podcaster needs feedback and loves getting calls, so
yes.
Just want to call and say you're doing a great job.
Call your love. Thank you.
Quite a while back, I heard Codename Starkeeper, and man, your production quality is awesome. So I'm excited.
Let me stop you there, because obviously big, big, big shout out to Joe Harrison, who is doing the sound design and musical scoring for Stitched Crosses, the audio drama, the Crusades era audio drama over at Grail Quest Books. He's going to be doing some work, I think, on Sea of Stars. No, not Sea of Stars. What is it? Sort of. No. Another thing that's like SOS, and I can't remember what it stands for. Sea of Stars is the audio drama in which I play an Irishman named Colin O'Donnell. And Sea of Sort of Saints. I don't remember what it's called. But if you go to GrailQuestBooks.com, ding, it's right there on the sidebar. So you'll see that. And that first thing you said about going through the archives, you're sick, really. You know, it's a good thing that the As Yet Untitled podcast is no longer out there in internet land because it sounds like crap. So really, there's only so far back you can go before it's really not worth your time. So you decided what?
Here, what's coming up the pipe for you?
Oh, you're excited.
Down the pipe,
sorry.
Whatever.
Yeah,
and,
pipe.
Yeah, whatever. I just saw on Twitter you talking to T at IT Studios.
I do that.
And he said that his writing podcast might be coming back if he gets back in the groove of writing.
Possibly.
That's exciting news.
Yeah.
Because we're all missing that. Anyways, I'm rambling, but I'll let you go and just wanted to call in and say, really like your stuff. Awesome production quality.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to hear more come out from you in
Thanks.
The future.
Yeah,
here's
of course.
To an awesome 2010 and beyond.
Thank you.
See you later. Whip crack.
Whip crack. Nice whip crack. Don't you mean? Yes, of course you do. And I really need to start using that for my bell. But what I need to do is I need to go in and I need to de-amplify it negatively so be the right volume, because what I do is I record at a very low level, probably with my peak volume at minus 12 on my Audacity meter, and then I will do noise reduction and compress it up and bring it up. So I avoid the clipping and things that I want to avoid, the distortion and all of that. I'm going to take a break now, run a promo, and when we come back, 26 minutes of me and T. Morris, just like you always want.
Night had fallen hours before. My desk lamp was the only light in the office. The night was hot and I was down to my undershirt and suspenders as I worked. The light glinted off the bullet in my hand as I carved the last line of the rune. A curl of lead fell from the slug and onto the evening's edition of the New York Imperial Times. I set the bullet down on the paper next to the dateline, May 13th, 1931. I carved the demon's name into five more bullets just like the first, and I loaded them into my revolver. It was either going to be him or me. And I only had to the end of the new moon to finish my .38 caliber banishing. Set in a magically twisted 1930s, Two-Fisted Tales of Magic is a new podcast by Ted Wade. The Great War has broken the walls to dimensions once relegated to folklore. Humanity now shares the Earth with dwarves and orcs from the kingdoms of the Hollow Earth, fair folk of the Fey Realms, and creatures of the Demon Reaches. Humanity can call upon magic through wizardry, superlative physical powers, and weirdly enhanced technology. Coming April 10th, 2010, TwoFistedMagic.com.
That'll be the way we line this puppy up. You'll be able to line up your bell with my bell. We'll be good.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds great. That's a great idea. I didn't think of that because, you know.
Or better yet, here,
my headphones
I'll go you one better. You're picking this up, so this will work just fine. There you go. It's an obedience clicker. And I'm not kidding. This is the go out get yourself this thing. This is the best thing you can get because it's only okay, I've got to stop this. What the hell is this? Jeez Louise. Anyway, all right, so it's like, you know, I want to say these obedience clickers, they're maybe $5 for a set of three. And when you use these against your when you make a mistake, you stop and you make a click, and you'll see it in your audio. It makes two very long straight lines, and you cannot miss them. I picked this trick up from, I think it was Steve Ely. Steve Ely who taught me that. So yeah, these the obedience trainers, it's great. So now you got the bell and you got these clicks to line up your audio with, so we're all good.
Awesome.
Okay.
Now are you ready? what's the name of your book? All of Twitter and Sam's Teach Yourself Twitter in 10 minutes, is that right?
Brilliant.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so yes, it goes now, back that far.
And while that was my last podcast novel, that was actually not the last podcast fiction I've done. And I'm beginning to realize that. I'm beginning to think, you know, oh man, you know, what have I done lately? And I'm like, oh wait a minute, I've done quite a bit. So it's just, I mean, but I you know, I was I for obvious reasons I've been thinking a lot about this. I've been thinking a whole lot about podcast fiction. And I have to admit, with listening to Metamore City and with listening to, which by the way, before I forget, Indiana Jim, dude, you know, you get a bell for your performance in Metamore City. You're tearing it up. I'm digging your performance, awesome. Man. But, between Metamore City and listening to PC Herring Cybrosis, I'm really itching to get back into podcasting, novel length fiction. I'm really itching and getting back into that. So we will.
Well,
you know.
let me encourage you to start with Legacy, because I have a fairly significant role in that book.
Yes, you do. Yes,
I'd
you
like
do.
To see it happen.
Yeah, I would like to see it happen too. But but here's I'm gonna let you in on a little something. Here's the thing: is that right now, my tomorrow with Dragon Moon Press is a great big question mark. And I really do not want to start podcasting any more Billy or any more Moravi until it's actually a twofold. One, I would like to be able to nab my own, my own New York contract. I've seen, as I mentioned on the Final Survival Guide, I've seen a lot of other people do it, and right. and I've had people ask me on Twitter and in real life, well, where's yours? You know, you started this whole movement. Where's your contract? And I'm going, you know, that's a really good question. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I have been, I've been working so much on the nonfiction. On the Podcasting for Dummies books, on the Twitter books, that, you know, I haven't been able to get my butt in a chair and finish up any new fiction.
Right.
Now, you know, that's the cold hard truth, and I think that that's what writers need to do. They need to go, okay, well, why aren't I where I'm at? And they need to fess up. They need to say, you know, all right, straight up, this is what happened, and this is what I need to do to change it. And so that's what I'm doing. But ironically, while I say that, at the same time, I'm here to promote all of Twitter. And I'm here to promote, of course, Sam's Teach Yourself Twitter in 10 minutes, because I'm still a writer and I still want to be able to make a living at this. And the best way I can do that is to sell books. Right. So I don't shy away from the books that I've done. I mean, you know, I'm very proud of Podcasting for Dummies, and I'm very proud I'm particularly proud of all of Twitter and Twitter in 10, because those I flew solo on.
Right.
And somebody asked me, you know, come on, T, can you really write a book on Twitter? And I think I've proven that I could write more than one book on Twitter.
Right.
So in a nutshell, that's what I'm looking at right now. Is, you know, while I'm promoting the Twitter books, at the same time, I'm starting to really focus on what I need to do to get back into podcasting fiction.
Well, that would be good, because I have sorely missed your fiction, sir.
You know what? I've missed it too. And I don't mean that in a misogynistic, yes, I miss my brilliance. And I'm not saying that. Well, sometimes I do, but no, what I miss is the moment when I'm in my studio and I'm cooking away and I go, oh, wait a minute, let me try this. And I go back and I go, oh, that's, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, when I have my own little geekgasm, I'll give you my favorite. I'll give you one where I must've listened to this moment over and over and over again. It was part two of chapter, was it 14? Yeah, I think it was chapter 14, The Call of the Cannon, where they had their big sea battle. And I cliffhangered everybody because chapter 14 was one of the big ass chapters in Moravi. So I ended it with a moment that I did listen to a lot. I had the music building, Rafton. Music hit, and then you hear, open fire! Cannons go off, and then, to be continued. I'm sure there were a lot of people that really screamed at their iPods at that point. But then the other geekgasm moment was when I was like, I gotta have the right music for this. I gotta have the right music for this particular scene.
Yeah.
So I'm surfing through Digital Juice, and I go, well, you know what? I can't find anything. I cannot find anything perfect. But then on the Hail Mary, the one that I have never listened to was Sports Stacks. But I thought to myself, okay, Sports Stacks. Huh. All right. And then I started thinking about all those great, I mean, I know you're a passionate man on football, very much like, yes. very much like Scott. And while I am not passionate about football, I enjoy a good football game, which is why I don't go to a lot of Redskins games. But I still enjoy I enjoy that good, like for example, the last Super Bowl. That was a good game. That wasn't just a good Super Bowl, that was just a good game. I mean, I hadn't tracked with either one of these teams, and I was screaming at the television because I was that wrapped up into it. But I started thinking about what do I love the most of the NFL? I love the NFL films.
Yeah.
I love those things. I mean, they were the Ken Burns of their day and age.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, maybe they've got that kind of music. And the first track I pick off of this is called Final Four. Mm-hmm. And it was like they did this whole riff on Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And I listened to that moment over and over and over again with that beginning when I said, Chapter 14, Part 2. Boom, 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 dun, dun, dun. And I had people ping me and go, T, when are you going to get sued by Disney? What are you doing using the Pirates of the Caribbean? And I said, no, baby. Digital juice, baby. For the win. You know, I miss that. That's what I miss being in the studio. And yeah. And now that you've done this repeatedly, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2007, to my knowledge, in 2007, you weren't doing this just yet, right?
No.
So
October, Halloween of 2007, I guess, was when Thesis of Fantasy
came out. Right. But you know, I genuinely miss that. I genuinely miss that the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a little envious of of PC Herring because I can hear those aha moments when he's doing his thing with Cybrosis.
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of those with Codename Starkeeper because, you know, obviously being Star Wars, it's you know, just for fun. Obviously, it's a hobby thing, but it's really a good proving ground. For trying things out. And I remember there's this one scene in particular where they're scaling a wall up to an air duct and one of the characters has to pull the last character in before these energy bars go down and, you know, they'd get zapped or whatever. And I cut three separate pieces of music from the Star Wars scores and actually changed the key and tempo on one of them to fit it in. And I was changing keys and mixing stuff and putting stuff together all over the place, and it worked. And it was so much fun. Just when you just get it right and you go, yeah, you know, it's exactly like the orchestra played it clean through. And it was quite a rush. And it was doing that when I realized this is what I want to be doing.
yeah. No lie.
But you're here to talk about you. And Lord knows that's not difficult for T. Morris.
No. Last time I checked, no.
However, it's easy to go 7.5 minutes without getting to the first question of the interview. You haven't been to Skywalker Ranch. Me neither.
No, but, you know. No. I'll tell you why. Because no, really, Lucas betrayed us all. Lucas betrayed us all. And I'm not talking about those god-awful prequels. I'm talking about Kingdom of the Crystal Suck.
Oh.
He touched the hat. Shia LaBeouf touched the hat. I wanted to cut the boy's hand off because he dared to touch the hat.
Yeah, but Indy took it back before he walked out of the church.
It had LaBeouf cooties on it. It had LaBeouf cooties. And they're making another one.
I know, isn't it great?
And I'm telling you now, LaBeouf is going to wear the hat. He's going to wear the hat.
You know why? I don't know.
Because Lucas is going to... No. I will bet you $50 right now on your show, Indy, that is exactly what's going to happen. And I'll tell you why. Because Lucas likes to thumb his nose at his fans. Tony Mast, and, you know, at Tony Mast or Backseat Producers... Tony Mast told me that when he was watching the movie in St. Louis and that moment came up, people were booing in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
They were booing in the audience. I guarantee you. Because that was the same way people felt about Jar Jar. And what happened? Lucas kept bringing him back.
Yeah, but he brought him back in severely reduced roles.
But what happened in the third one? In the third one, what happens? He basically pins the entire fall of the Old Republic on Jar Jar.
No, he was and I'm just like, a puppet. Come on.
But I'm telling you.
He was just the mouthpiece.
Lucas had a choice. He could have listened to his fans that one time and said, yep, you know what? I am George Lucas, but I think the fans are right. Maybe Jar Jar was going a little too far.
That's why he cut
but
him
you
back.
Know what?
That's why he cut him back.
And he made him pivotal. He made him pivotal in that third abomination. But that is not where I thought like Lucas betrayed me. I thought to myself the whole time, at least I still got Indiana Jones. At least I still got Indy. I got Harrison. I got Harrison and Daddy Connery. I'm happy. I'm happy. And what did he do? You know, this is another rant for another time. You know this. He touched the hat. End of story.
But see that,
and Han shot first. End of story.
Well, George has been known and photographed wearing the Han shot first T-shirt.
That was photoshopped. I found out. You can't fool me. Fool me once, shame on you.
Really?
To quote W, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you won't get fooled again. So anyway, weren't we talking about Twitter?
Yeah, I'll have to come over to your house and. I don't know. Stogies and brandy, and we'll talk all about it.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Now you're talking. Now you're talking, sir.
By the way, as an aside, I got to say, you're the only one in the potosphere whose books I've actually spent retail money on.
Not even Scott's?
Not even Sigourney. I'm not really a horror guy.
Really?
I listened...
That reminds me of something.
Uh-oh.
But go ahead and finish your thing. Now, because I mean you were really coming out about Scott and about his his success as a podcast author. So I just made the bold assumption that you had his books, including, you know, Contagious and et al. Mm-hmm. So you don't.
I love what he does.
Right.
And I love what he's done. And I listened to The Rookie and I listened to Nocturnal because mostly it was San Francisco. I mean, it's just an action flick in a in a podcast novel. So, and it was like a monster movie and a detective story all rolled into one. But I did also listen to Earthcore. So I love what he's done. I just don't read those books.
Right. Right.
You know,
right.
And just matter of personal preference. But as you recall from Adventure 37, Paragons and Pariahs of the Free Model. Scott Sickler's my hero. He really is.
Well, but I did want to correct you on one point. And this is where I think Indy as a podcaster, particularly when you're doing these types of rants, you need to do a wee bit more research, bro. Scott was not the first and the only one to make this work. Before Scott, there was John Scalzi, who blogged his entire book, which became, for Tor, Old Man's War, a very successful series for Tor and for John Scalzi.
Right. Now,
before John, before yes. John, we have Cory Doctorow, who gave out Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom as a PDF. This is in the infancy of podcasting, mm-hmm. and he gave it out as a PDF. It has been downloaded over 800,000 times. But the book itself, the print version, that has actually sold enough to go into like a seventh or eighth printing.
Wow.
So you know, while people hold Scott up as the poster child of success in this realm, he's not. Mm-hmm. He is the first podcaster to do so. And you know, I have real high hopes. I read the rough draft of Geist, of Pip Ballantyne's Geist, and mm-hmm. personally, I think it's going to rock and roll. Do I think it's going to reach New York Times bestseller? Well, that's a roll of the dice.
Yeah.
The cover helps. Holy cow, does that cover help? That's a sweet cover she got, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, that's outstanding.
But I really think that Scott was part of has been part of a movement of, as you said, of the free model. Mm-hmm. And I think for you to say, well, Scott's the only one that's done it and has shown that it's a success and it really doesn't work. And therefore, unless it works for somebody else, it really doesn't work. There have been other people that have been proving that giving away something for nothing can work, but it's all in how you execute the marketing and all in how you pace the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were I think what I, at least from what I'm seeing, is that I think that there were some people that, and I'm not just talking about Hutch. I'm talking about many authors. Right. Even before this happened, there were writers that were getting into podcasting, and they were disappointed in their numbers.
Yeah.
And my thoughts about that were, okay, why are you disappointed in the numbers? Well, Scott's got all these numbers, and Hutch has got all these numbers, and I'm like, yeah, it's, and you know, Murr's got all these numbers. Yeah, it's because they've been doing it since the beginning.
Yep.
You know, I've been doing it since the beginning, and you know what? This is exactly why I try really hard not to look at my numbers, because I don't want to focus on the numbers. I want to focus on the story.
Mm-hmm.
I want to focus on the production aspects of my story. I want to focus on really telling a good story and having fun telling it to you. But do I still believe in the free model? Yeah, because when I was podcasting Moravi, you know, during the remastered part, when I was podcasting Moravi, sales went up again.
Mm-hmm.
And these are, and you know, and I was even being told by people that, you know, they had listened to Moravi, and they were still listening to Moravi Remastered, and they bought another copy of the book for a friend of theirs. You know, I mean, I know that this model works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that mean that when I podcast a novel, I'm expecting people to go out and buy my book? Oh, no. No. I am thrilled that they're listening.
Right.
Because the audience now is so vast. And when people focus on the numbers, I'm like, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. The numbers will come provided you are creating a quality product.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. But that's why I feel that the free model can work. And I think another reason why Scott, and this was something else that you didn't do the research on, that I think you need to be called to task to. The other reason why I think Scott worked so brilliantly, and this is what you know, knock wood or ring bell, when I get my New York contract, I am going to ask for podcasting rights. Mm-hmm. And if they go, well, we can't, you know, we don't want to give it away for free, I'm like, well, I'm going to follow Scott Sigler's model. Mm-hmm. And he does mention this in two of his podcast novels. One of the elements that made it work for Scott. One of the elements. There were a lot of elements at play for all of this stuff. But one of the things that made Scott's element that made Scott's podcast work was that the podcast was the bare knuckles, bare bones story. But then when he released the print versions, particularly for Crown, Infected and Contagious, there were scenes that were not available in the podcast.
Uh-huh.
And then when he released the audio version, there were scenes that were not available in either the podcast or the print version. So it's a bit like going to the movie Clue. If you want to see, you know, and I don't know if it really worked or not for Clue, but Clue is considered one of the great classics of comedy now. But when you think about it during the day, I knew people when Clue came out that they went to all three theaters to see how every ending played out.
There were multiple endings?
You didn't know this?
I had no idea.
Oh, no, come on. You're pulling my leg, right?
No, seriously.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah, yeah.
That is awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The way Clue ends, there was a Theater A, a Theater B, and Theater C. Theater A, this person did it. Theater B, somebody else did it. And Theater C, this person did it. When they released it as a VHS and beta, they basically put all the endings on the end. So, and they play really goofy music. Yeah, they play really goofy music and they throw up a plate that says, that's how it could have ended, but what about this? And then you saw the point of where they edited it, which was really clever. But when the movie came out in theatrical release, they played the same movie in three different theaters and it had three different endings. And and you know what? That's what Scott did. Scott's like, if you want that exclusive content, and that's what he was relying on from his fans. His fans were like,
wait a minute, you mean there's different scenes on this one? There's different scenes in the book, and then there's the story itself. Oh wow! So they ran out and they got the audio version, and they got the print version.
Mm-hmm.
That's again, you know, you're giving back to this. You're giving back to the community, and you know, and for you know, but see, Moravi for me was already in print. Yeah. So what I was doing was, well, what can I do different? And I found this scene that I'd edited out, and I missed it. And I thought, you know what? I want to put this back in. And boy, that felt good. That felt really good to just see that scene realized. And the voices I had cast in that scene, you know, there was, you know, Pip was playing Ascana, but then I had Laura Burns as the maiden of the temple. And then Mark Bailey pops in, and boy, did he steal that scene. You know, Mark Bailey and Chuck Tomasi, three of the most underused voice talents I think that are out there for men, because dang, Mark is tearing up Cybrosis. And as much fun as Chuck was in Case of the Singing Sword, he is fantastic as tech guy in Cybrosis. And, so that's that. I wanted to make sure that I voiced my opinion on that. I think, I mean, because you know, that show you did about the free model, not only did I find it ballsy of a show, I found it almost educated. There were just a few. These were the few almost educated, because there were a few facts that you missed. Part of the success that I believe Scott has had is that he offers exclusive content. He offers exclusive content in all three mediums. The podcast is the story itself for free.
Uh-huh.
But if you want more, get the book. If you want even more, get the audiobook. And that's not what made Scott a success, but that really came into play. Because now people had a reason to go out and get the book. Apart from just support Scott, it was also, wait a minute, there might be an extra nugget in here. There might be this, there might be that. And I you know, that is the model that I think people should follow.
Interesting.
Then the other things I needed to correct you on were the people that came before Scott.
Well, to my defense, I was specifically talking about those who had podcasts.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't. No. You were talking about the free model. No.
That's what I was going to just say. I was going to say, you're right.
This is
the whole free model portion of that argument.
Say it again. Say it again, sir. Say it again.
T. Morris is right. Thank you. T. Morris is right.
This is why he has me on the show.
T. Morris is right.
Can I just have that as a drop-in? Yeah.
So you know what I think is hilarious is that we both apparently had kids snoring in the background. I'm not sure if it made any of the released audio when he mentioned that Sabrina was in the room snoring under the computer desk. It was pretty funny. Notice that I did not take him up on his $50 bet, because you know what? I don't like those odds.
The possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
Now, while I don't like those odds, I will say I don't think that's going to happen, because I think George would do it if he was going to set up a series of films with Shia LaBeouf as Mutt Williams. I don't think he's going to do that, because the thing about Indiana Jones, it's always been Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. It's the only reason Crystal Skull works at all for me is that it's still Harrison Ford being Indiana Jones. Okay? Has nothing to do with Shia LaBeouf, boof, whatever, bouf, I don't care how you say it. It has everything to do with Harrison Ford. And so taking that element away, it might as well be something else. And I think George is going to realize it's not going to be half as successful as Indiana Jones has been. I mean, if you have Harrison Ford playing the character, you're going to make money. If you don't, that's when you're not going to make the money, because Harrison Ford is the draw. It's why he gets paid $50 million a movie. I mean, it's pretty simple math for me. Also, I did not have any intention of excluding other people who have made this free model work. Obviously, Scalzi and Cory Doctorow have made their marks using the free model. Now, my only experience, my only launching point is the podcast novel. And so that's why Scott Sigler became such a big example for me. Now, you certainly should go check out Cory Doctorow. and John Scalzi and find out other people who have made the free model work, who have used it to their advantage properly and built their audience the right way. And, you know, explore the issue. With T taking me to task, that's fine. And yes, talking about the free model, I neglected to mention those people because I'm just not experienced with those guys. And my experience is just, as I said, with the podcast novel. So anyway, that's it for this episode. I've got work on The Last Guardians to get to and other various and sundry activities. I guess just call that voicemail line like Dan Dan the Art Man from Spokane, Washington, and Scott Roche, Spiritual Tramp, on Twitter. And until next time, I've stapled my fedora to my head, and I'm riding off into the sunset.
You've been listening to The Adventures of Indiana Jim, a production of Visionary Creative Works. Visit podcast.indianajim.net and leave comments on the blog. Send in your emails and audio feedback to podcast@indianajim.net. I'm Dr. John Small. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.